What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast. Physiotherapists are similar, but not identical to athletic trainers. So that's a quick reference to my niece. She used to say, this is similar, but not identical, when she was, I don't know, like 4, 5, 6, something like that. So I just had to throw that in there. So physiotherapists are similar, but not identical to ATs. So our guest is Jamie McFarland. He works with Northern Ireland Developmental Soccer League, an elite soccer league there. He's a physiotherapist. And I've also got Megan McKay, a new mom, so congratulations, Megan. And she has worked with many different physiotherapists doing international rugby, so she's got a lot of great insight as to both, because she is an athletic trainer. She's worked internationally as an athletic trainer and worked with physiotherapists. So Jamie's going to tell us some of his story. Megan's going to tell us some of her experience. And we're going to talk about the differences, the ways that they work together, the ways that you can help an athlete transition from international to the United States, the healthcare-wise. So this is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/physiotherapist. Again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/physiotherapist. But without much further ado, Jamie, welcome to the show. And why don't you tell us a little bit of your story?
Yeah, thank you very much. So I went to school, obviously our schooling program, education is different here. I went to high school and we do certain subjects and sort of got an interest within, you know, medicine, and thought that I like sports as well. So I came to sort of physiotherapy through the sports route, which a lot of people do, although we don't just work in sports. After school, I went and done my associates, and then went on and done my bachelor's and then my master's, and was quite fortunate to have a colleague and friend on the master's who worked within the program that works with soccer, and they said they were looking for more physios, and I jumped at the chance to have Northern Ireland's soccer team on my resume.
All right. You had mentioned that your dad was an EMT, and again, you said you were playing sports, and so here currently in Texas, I can get a bachelor's, and then I can get take my courses and get licensed as an athletic trainer, and then anywhere else in the United States, you have to be BOC or Board of Certification certified, and that at this time, if I was going to start new, it would require a master's level degree, so I'd have to go through a master's level program. So talk to me a little bit more about what it takes to become a physiotherapist.
So in the UK, for the most part, we work off a bachelor's. There are some pre-registration master's programs that you can go into, sort of like a grad school. But for the most part, it's a 3 to 4 year master's program, or sorry, bachelor's program, that usually you do around about 1,000 clinical hours to graduate with. And then once you graduate, you apply to join the CSP as a Charter Society of Physiotherapy. And they're like our union body. They provide our insurance and whatnot. And then you also have to register through the Healthcare Professions Council. They allow us, they keep a register of everyone, of registered professions, and allow ourselves to call ourselves physiotherapists. And you could take my name and my profession and go on and make sure that I am registered. And they basically take everything from the university. So if the name's on the register as a certain profession, you have passed effectively a registered program.
All right, so you have a national registry, you have to meet the national standards and then continue your education.
Yeah, as part of their standards and as part of the CSP standards, we have to do continuing education, we have to have a portfolio of continual professional development, and every 2 years you could be picked for audit.
All right, so far sounds really similar to an athletic trainer. So tell me, what does the job look like? What are you doing on a day-to-day basis with your Northern Ireland Developmental Soccer League?
So at the minute, currently I've been sort of picking up on skills that have been, that I'm not using a lot in sports medicine. I've been contracted to a hospital department, emergency department. So my day at the minute is a little bit similar. But with the soccer, it would vary depending if we were away on a trip for games or if we were just sort of going through a normal week for practice. A normal week for practice would have only had about 6 to 7 hours of practice sessions in the evenings. But then when we were away, a day would consist of you get up, you'd have your breakfast, you'd speak to the players, see if there's any injuries or anything that's occurred overnight, and then you go off to practice. You deal with anything during the practice sessions as they arise, and then afterwards, you'd probably be back for lunch, and then maybe have like an open clinic where they can come along if they've any injuries cropped up during that, or if they need any accessory work, things like that. and then go on from there. Within the hospital at the minute, I would first thing, sort of 8:30, be up in the wards dealing with patients that have come in, whether they have a chest respiratory issue or any musculoskeletal issues in that way. And that pretty much would have my day right throughout.
All right. So again, it sounds a lot like an athletic trainer. You're there for the practices, you're dealing with the injuries, you're preventing injuries, you're kind of following up with hospital visits or doctor visits, again, musculoskeletal injuries. You mentioned that there's a national registry there. You're in the UK. So what if you wanted to go somewhere else other than Ireland to work as a physiotherapist? What does that take?
So even if going from the UK to Ireland, there's still a process to go through to transfer in. They have a new registry like the HCPC, and they're trying to bring that in. So it would be a case of applying to them and getting my education verified and going from there, because I know their base is a bachelor's as well with some master's. Throughout the rest of Europe, from what I can gather, I've spoken to some contacts that I have there and some colleagues, and for the most part in Europe, it's somewhat similar. A lot of places do have a registry, and you effectively apply to them, and then you get your education evaluated either by them or by a third-party company. And then as long as you meet their standards, you can be then be licensed. You sort of get the license to practice. I know in Germany, their education level is more of instead of polytechnic level, so more like an associate's, I think that would work out for the States. And they do have some bachelor's programs, but for the most part, they're polytechnic level. And like in the Netherlands, I spoke to some colleagues, and they have their own education side that they do. They're currently doing their master's, but for the most part, it's bachelor's. Same again, you apply and get evaluated and go through that way. However, if I wanted to go to the States and work in the States, obviously I've tried that. You do have to get your education evaluated by a third-party company. And as you had said, it's more of a doctorate level here in the States. So my education wasn't just enough for that. So I'd have to sort of top that up for my master's and top that up to get enough education. But pretty much across, well, same sort of thing. You'd apply to the registering body, get your credentials evaluated. If you don't meet the standards, get their education topped up.
All right. So obviously there's some difference there. There's the associates, like you said, that's the 2 year. Then the bachelor's is 4 year. The master's is the 2 years after the bachelor's, so the 6 years kind of thing. Then the doctorate. So again, it sounded similar to athletic training. And now you also mentioned that you're here currently in the United States visiting a girlfriend, and that you may be possibly transitioning to working, living here in the United States. So tell me a little bit about that process and how that's working out for you.
So obviously, being a physiotherapist and having physical therapy there, that was my first avenue, because we were basically the same profession. The difficulty arises because for the most part, the base level is now a doctorate, DPT. So that's the difficult part for me and sort of anyone else that would be coming from the UK or Ireland. For the most part, because we only have a bachelor's, there's a discrepancy in the levels there. However, with my master's, I don't have as much of a discrepancy, but I am missing some classes. So to find out the information, I just went on through the American Physical Therapy Association to find out what I needed to do. And I then found out about the FCCPT, who are the Foreign Credentialing Commission on Physical Therapy. So they are the ones that only evaluate credentials for physical therapists from physiotherapists. So they are doing this day in, day out. And you apply to them, and they get a review. So I got a comprehensive review. It's a 38-page report, and it sort of evaluates your whole education life. So it went right back to my high school education, because I know in America there's more general education. So they were able to take into account my high school stuff, and so I had to go and get transcripts, course documentation, everything, and send it off them. You know, it was probably a good couple inches thick, everything that I had to send in, and they took that all and evaluated that. Unfortunately, it came back that I wasn't educated enough to meet the standards as a doctorate level. I had enough credits, just not enough of the right credits. So currently I'm working on trying to get those right credits.
Okay, so if you get those credits, then you would be considered a DPT, a doctorate of physical therapy, and you'd be able to practice here in the States as a physical therapist, not as a physiotherapist.
That's correct.
Okay. All right, Megan, I know you've been hanging out there, and again, Megan's got her baby there with her, so if she hops out or anything like that, then or you hear some cries, then that's why, but we're lucky to have you with us. So Megan, tell me a little bit about your experience with physiotherapists.
So my first experience was back in 2010. My little brother tried out for and made the team for the Wales men's national lacrosse team. And through that process, the team found out what I did for a living. And at the time, they had a physiotherapist working with them who just kind of volunteered. I think she was a brand new grad, knew some of the players beforehand. And so she was preparing to work their entire world championships, which were in Manchester that year herself. So they extended an invitation for me to come out and help. So I did. So I didn't know anything about physiotherapists. I didn't know the difference or anything. I just jumped at the opportunity to go work internationally and figured I'd figure it out later. So we got there and quickly learned there was a few differences. Some of it's personality, obviously, but mostly, as an athletic trainer coming over to work a big tournament, I was expecting kind of a lot more regimen, a lot more acute care, that kind of thing. And she was still doing a lot of manual therapy post-game, post-match, that kind of thing. And so for me, the biggest difference I found was the focus on manual therapy techniques. I know here in the States that's changing a lot within our profession. Athletic trainers are becoming much more aware of and educated in various manual therapy techniques. We always have been educated in them, but we haven't always necessarily used them, I feel. And so I think that tide is changing a little bit on our end. But it was definitely an interesting experience having to just kind of get dropped in from a plane, walk into a club room and meet everybody and then get to work for 3 weeks. So it was definitely interesting. There were a little bit differences in terms of return to play. I think we're a lot more regimented and strict about that on a wide scale. With the rest of my experience since then with physiotherapists is it varies greatly, particularly with what country the physiotherapist has experience in, and then also what their sport experience is. That to me is the biggest difference and I think Jamie will probably touch on this a little bit. Much like athletic trainers can go into different work settings, physiotherapists can as well. And so not all have a lot of sports experience. And so that I think as an athletic trainer going and working with physiotherapists is one thing to find out about what their level of sport experience is. And then also what country they're from, because as Jamie talked about, he's called people here and there, and it's for the most part the same as far as they're having to register, things like that. I have found that it's definitely similar in terms of regulation of physiotherapists, but every country is very, very different. I worked most recently in 2016 in Budapest, and we kind of got all the medical folks together, and the level of experience was vastly different. The level of sport experience was vastly different. And so from that meeting, we decided to kind of create a little international lacrosse athletic trainers group. So if you happen to be out there working international lacrosse, look us up on Facebook. We have a closed group for that with some questions that you'd have to answer to get into the group. But it's been very interesting seeing the difference based on different countries, different parts of the world that physiotherapists work in. So that's my take on it, at least initially.
Jamie, can you speak to that there some? Megan was talking about the variant from country to country and also maybe some of the differences that we provide. Athletic trainers tend to provide the more acute care. We're there on the field, whereas physiotherapists may be more in the clinic. And then also some of the different settings. Can you just speak about that?
Yeah, I was just said the education levels does vary in the amount of clinical hours. Then alongside that would vary for the most part. Physiotherapists would tend to be found within a hospital or a clinical care setting. And that sort of can help and hinder the sports experience that Megan was talking about. A lot of, I know here in the, or at home in the UK, a lot of physiotherapists, once they graduate, they know people on a local sports team, and that's how they get their basic sports experience. They do a sports first aid course so they can do pitch side. And then they just go from there. They don't, there's no formal training as such. However, I went on and done my master's in sport and exercise medicine. So you do get, there are further in education out there. Some of the people on that were teaching in my master's were consultant orthopedic surgeons. The local professional rugby team, Ulster Rugby, their medical director, he came in to speak to us. And so you're getting a bit more education on the sports. And I was fortunate enough to work on a mentorship program there for the university, where the Sports Institute physiotherapists were sort of guiding us and mentoring us. But yeah, for the most part, there's not much sports experience, and because majority of physiotherapists will be found in a hospital setting.
You said the 1,000 clinical hours, so that can be in just the hospital. It doesn't have to be on like with a team, with sports or anything like that?
No, for the majority, going through your clinical rotations, as we call them, you'll not get sports experience. We have to hit our core area, sort of musculoskeletal outpatients, a respiratory care program or respiratory care rotation, and then a neuro rehab. We did five, six-week placements, and we had to hit at least those three clinical areas. So the other two around that, we had an elective placement that, so potentially you could have organized yourself a sports placement, but there was no formal sports education as you're doing your undergraduate degree.
All right, Megan?
Yeah.
You'd mentioned, I forget what it was now, you'd mentioned one of the other things, the aspects you wanted to talk about.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, as an athletic trainer, a lot of times we get international athletes, and that can always pose a challenge too, because their experience with us is limited, or they've never experienced an athletic trainer. They tend to get the same confusion the public does. They think we are a personal trainer or a strength coach. But the thing to remember, you know, in talking about National Athletic Training Month this year, I think that the NATA did a great job choosing the slogan this year, Competent Care for All. And I think, you know, when you're approached with an international athlete, that's something you need to consider, is do they have experience with an athletic trainer? Is it a physiotherapist? What is the physiotherapy like in their country? Did their team have a physiotherapist, or did they have to go seek care in the clinical setting for their physiotherapist? Things like that will greatly affect the way that you're able to care for that athlete, and can potentially cause some pitfall communication issues, pitfalls, treatment bumps, speed bumps, as I like to call them, right at the start of the relationship. So, for instance, right now I'm working with the professional rugby team in Houston, the Houston Sabercats, and I have athletes from seven different countries. So getting started with them, you know, it was easy for me because I had the floor, and, you know, I can do what I want. I can meet with them. I can call a team meeting if I want, things like that. And so what I did first and foremost is just explained what I am, what our profession is, things like that, and then established some ground rules, scheduling, treatment times, et cetera. Because a lot of times internationally, that's not always so regimented. A lot of times they'll have to pay their own money to go see a physiotherapist as well. So a lot of them would think that they would have to pay extra, or the team was going to have to pay for them to see me, things like that. So, so I think if you're working with an international patient, that's something that you might need to consider as a barrier to your care when thinking about competent care for different cultures. So that's just something in my experience that I've noted. Working with Wales, it was very much the case that they thought they were going to have to pay for treatment. It's very expensive over there to go see a physiotherapist as well. So a lot of times you'll get chronic injuries that have been unseen by a physiotherapist just because of, you know, not being able to afford it, or prioritizing that money to something else besides, you know, a chronic hamstring that's kind of bothering you, that sort of thing. So I think that's something for athletic trainers to consider as well.
All right, what do you think on that, Jamie?
Yeah, like, I know here, obviously, or at home in the UK, we don't have the privatized healthcare. So, you know, the wait can be, you know, 6 weeks to a couple of months before you can go and see a physiotherapist through the healthcare. So a lot of people would have to go privately to get acute issues seen to. So, yeah, so that's, as Megan alluded to, that's where they're feeling they have to pay for it if they want to get it seen quickly. I've came across the same sort of things as well. A lot of people don't want to come see the physio because they think any number of things. They don't know enough of what we do, especially because I've worked with the youth. They just don't know what a physiotherapist is, and they feel if they report any injury, you know, they'll not get selected or anything like that. But yeah, it can vary from who, what their knowledge of the profession is, cropped up against the same sort of things I said. You know, they just don't know enough of what we do and feel that they would have to pay for it or anything like that. But I know as they are youth within the soccer program, they're getting used to us, and I've tried to sort of educate them on the benefits of a physiotherapist and what we can do for their prehabilitation or the rehabilitation and their injury prevention or injury reduction, and that they can take that forward with them, because a lot of them are sort of vying for contracts in professional Premier League clubs. So whenever they get across there, then in a more closed environment, that they know the benefit of what physiotherapy can do for them.
And one of the things that Megan mentioned in the beginning is the concussions. Like over here, you know, there's legislation that says, hey, if you suspect a concussion, the player does, the parent does, the coach does, then that kid has to be evaluated and go through the return to play protocol. At least here in Texas, that's the way it is. And then and they have to go through certain steps. So what does that look like there where you are as a physiotherapist?
So obviously we sort of go by the concussion consensus. I think the most recent one was in Berlin 2016 there, and they released their paper, and obviously I know Megan will know a lot about my sport is rugby. Played it for 12 years, absolutely love it. I'm going to try and pick it up again here in Portland. I was actually at a practice session last night for one of the local teams. And so because of that, the Irish Rugby Football Union and rugby's forward with concussion management here. And the IRFU obviously takes into account both Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland. They've pushed forward their graduated return to play protocol. Obviously, rugby now has a head injury assessment within the professional game. But there's a wider awareness of concussion, and the referees are having more of an onus on it at the lower levels. And within schools and clubs, they don't have, may not have a physiotherapist, so the referees are knowing more about it. Spectators, coaches are having more education on it. So there's a lot more education around concussions. I know within rugby, and I feel rugby in Ireland is pushing that forward, and that's sort of following suit then with sort of the different sports. They're all sort of starting to bring out their own concussion protocols. I think I read recently in the BJSM, the NFL's concussion protocol, that's just been released there as a paper. So, you know, everyone's starting to release their own form of a protocol, but it all sort of follows back from the concussion consensus statements, where you've got that graduated return to play, you've got to hit these levels. And I know the big thing for me working with youth is there's been a big onus to, like, so there are a few of a return to learn before a return to play. And I think that's, you know, key for a youth athlete, that, you know, return to learn if they can't concentrate, you know, because it's just sport, they've got the rest of their life they've got to live. So that return to learn is key for them before any return to play.
If I'm watching soccer, or especially if you're watching some of those YouTube videos, then you'll see a guy run out on the soccer field with the bag, and, you know, of course it's YouTube, so they pick the worst moments, right? But is that a physiotherapist that runs out there on the field with the little black bag to spray the cold spray on the athlete that's cramping up, is that usually a physiotherapist?
Yes, that is. When I've been working sports, I'm the one run up and down the sidelines. I'm the one that runs on and off the field for any injuries, anything like that. So yeah, for the most part in Europe, that will be a physiotherapist that is doing that. The more professional the teams you get, they will obviously require, within the job descriptions, they'll want you to have had a certain level of experience, certain teams, and also a certain level of education within sports medicine. So the lower level teams, not so much, you can cut your teeth there, but the higher level teams, they will want you to have more experience. But yeah, it's a physiotherapist that'll be running on and off the field with the black bag and the magic sponge.
I mean, one of the things that you both kind of mentioned was that you said it may take 6 months to get in to see a doctor with the state provided healthcare. And then Megan said a lot of the athletes think that they're going to have to pay extra. Is that something that you have to deal with as well? I know you said since you're dealing with younger kids, but you're part of the program. So here at the high school, If any athlete comes to me, then I take care of them, right? There's no charge. If I send them to the doctor, then, you know, that they're dealing with an outside entity. But is that how that works with you?
Sort of. Because the program is more of an international program, we kind of only borrow the players from their club or their team. So if they get injured playing for the international setup, obviously we look after them and deal with their treatment. If they get injured for their club and it's going to be a bit more of a longer term rehab, we will sort of send them back to their club medical staff and say to them, look, there you go. This is what we think the issue is. Speak to your club medical staff and we can follow up with them if we need to. However, if they going to be a shorter term rehab, if say they rolled their ankle at the weekend and it's just a case of giving them basic stuff to get over that rolled ankle and they're not going to be out for too long, then we would take that on. But for the most part, if they come to us and they're injured playing for us, we'll look after them. If not, we'll sort of release them back to their club to get their rehabilitation.
All right. You'd mentioned you need to take some extra classes to get the DPT to be the doctorate of physical therapy. What would it take, or did you even look into what would it take for you to be an athletic trainer here in the United States versus a physical therapist?
I tried to look into it. Unfortunately, I couldn't find anything that was as comprehensive as what the report I got from the FCCPT. And like that gave me a full paragraph of what I need to get. And I mean, I spoke to the BOC, and I know the National Athletic Training Association and the BOC have a joint agreement with Canada and Ireland that they're sort of like each one from the country can join, can apply and do the exam and join. However, there's nothing within the UK, so I couldn't find anything that I think it would be a case of me speaking to the universities to see. I'd probably need to go back and do some education that way, go through speak to the university, try and get what I have mapped across, and then go from there. But there was nothing that I could find through the NATA or the BOC that would literally go, this is what you've got to do, give us your credentials and your education or your transcripts, we'll look at that and we'll give you an answer.
Gotcha. So it's just not as clear cut as the PT. Do you feel that being a DPT or a physical therapist would more suit your career desires, or being an athletic trainer would more suit your career desires?
From the more I've looked into it and researched, I feel I love my sports. I love being in a sport environment. I feel that actually an AT would actually be a good route for me because I do love working in sports and things like that. And I know that for the most part in the US, correct me if I'm wrong, a PT will generally be clinic-based and will not really be in effectively the changing room or the training room there.
Won't be on the pitch.
Pardon?
They won't be on the pitch.
Yeah, and that's the aspect I love of it, because when I'm working in the hospital, your environment can be the same day in, day out. If you're on the same ward, you've got the same four walls, you're the same people. Obviously, that's not always a bad thing, because you do get to know them and get to know where everyone's strengths are. But within the sports field, it's an ever-changing environment, and you're always, especially if you love the sport. I mean, on the mentorship program, I worked for the collegiate rugby team, and rugby being my sport, I was in my environment. I loved it. Because I played the game, I could read the game. And obviously, because I'm the one running on and off the field, I knew when and how to watch for the game and knew if play was going to be coming back my way. Again, having my own personal safety going on there, as we all do as sort of first responders, you don't become a casualty yourself.
That's so tricky.
I can read the game a little bit better. And then obviously, like so soccer, having to get used to being called onto the field. But again, getting to learn about that, yeah, I feel as being an athletic trainer could potentially, that would be a better option for me.
Yeah, I agree. Most physical therapists are in a clinic, and then most athletic trainers are associated with athletics. Now, obviously, at D1 colleges or at professional sports, most have an athletic trainer that is also a physical therapist, so they are dual credentialed. But that's usually only with big programs with big money, so it's not usually at the high school level that somebody would be employed as a physical therapist. So, Megan, other questions, thoughts for? Go ahead.
Well, I think it's good to go off what Jamie was talking about back when he was talking about the concussion protocols with rugby, and then you talking about soccer as well. I think it also varies by sport on the international level as well. So, for instance, with rugby, World Rugby is a well-established organization. They have a very clear-cut health and safety guidelines set up. They have requirements that their players get concussion education in order to play, even at the youth level. And they're putting together a lot of data with their HIAs, et cetera, or head injury assessments, which are only done at the elite world level matches. So I think that's a good point that Jamie brings up, is that rugby is very organized as far as that goes. However, lacrosse, for instance, I'll speak about lacrosse because I have experience with that. As I was saying, in Budapest, we kind of all got together as a medical group, but there was no medical meeting planned ahead of the tournament. They didn't outline where the EMS was going to be. I was the only one there that knew about equipment removal in a potential C-spine injury, and I had a helmet removal kit with me, and they were all fascinated by that. And so I ended up doing an impromptu little in-service, sorry, she's making an appearance. I ended up doing a little impromptu in-service to show them what we do here in the States in terms of, emergency equipment removal with helmets in a potential C-spine injury, because that's not an education that they've gotten. As Jamie said, a lot of them get their experience just by working the sport. There's no formal education on that. So little nuances for each sport can vary, I think, in terms of the experience of the physio versus the athletic trainer. There's a lot of areas I feel physios have more experience. Like I mentioned at the beginning, manual therapy, they can bring a wealth of knowledge and expertise to the to manual therapy with a team, particularly if the athletic trainer doesn't have much experience with it. So I think it depends by sport as well. We've all seen the problems that soccer has had, at the international level. So that might be an example of that as well.
I mean, what other questions did you have for Jamie?
I think one thing to touch on also was him coming to work here as an athletic trainer. One of the reasons the UK doesn't have clear-cut guidelines, and something the International Committee is looking into and the NATA looks into, is how those undergraduate degrees, master's degrees line up. So as he was saying, as a physiotherapist over the UK, they don't get any formal sport-specific clinical rotations. But I think for the UK becoming like Ireland or Canada, that's a big difference. So I think that's one of the holdups for UK being recognized. There's also two different types of programs you can go through in the UK. One is a sports rehab-based program, and the other one is not. And so the sports rehab-based program tends to be more aligned with athletic training as far as clinical competencies, rather than the regular physiotherapy one. I can't remember what it's called. So for the UK, for instance, that's one of the holdups and why the NATA doesn't just have a bullet point outline for him to figure out how to come over and convert, because the education is very different and ours is so specific. I think in Spain, we're looking at getting a university program there accredited. They've been looking at schools in Jordan and a few other countries as well, but those individual universities have decided to take on an athletic training type curriculum and implement that into their university over there. And so that's the difference. So then those universities are just looking to potentially become accredited by the BOC in their home country. So that might be another avenue for people working and living internationally if they're looking at coming over in the future. It's not right now, but we're kind of on the verge of that.
All right, Jamie, what else you got? Talking about physical therapists, athletic trainers, or even just tell me some of the unique parts of your job.
Yeah, I mean, even just sort of on the back of what Megan was saying there with the education varying and the no formal bit here in the UK, because I know, although as I said, it went through mine, from looking at OSU's Oregon State University's athletic training program to see what was on there when I was looking through, a lot of stuff I'd done on a separate course through the IRFU, the Irish Rugby Football Union, their Safe Rugby program, so the standard approach to field emergencies. Their varying levels, so the spinal immobilization, equipment removal, player removal, all that was then covered in a separate course, but that was then governed by the national body. So that's sort of how I had to go and get other things that were, as I thought, seemed to be a sort of core part of the AT education within the universities.
All right.
What position did you play, Jamie?
I started off as a number eight, then got moved to second row, and at the minute I'm trying my hand at a center or fullback, just to see how that goes for a bit of a difference.
Right. Do you want to explain to the listeners what a number eight means?
So
most Americans won't know what that is.
It's a jersey number.
Number eight is the last one of the forwards. He has an eight on his back, funny enough, and he is in the back row at the back of the scrum.
All right. Josh Dawsey is watching live on Facebook and asked if you're an AT or physical therapist in another country, and I think we answered that, but one of the things I didn't really ask is, do you have physical therapy or physical therapists over there where you are? And then also, do you have any athletic trainers over there? Like you said, you're in the UK, but in Ireland, and Megan mentioned Canada also has like the joint agreement. So are there athletic trainers in those other countries as well, or physical therapists?
So as far as I'm aware, we don't have a physical therapist as such in the UK. I know as part of our register through the HCPC, we are allowed to be called physiotherapist or physical therapist. It's sort of considered the same here. Although we don't have athletic trainers, we do have sort of sports therapists, which are kind of, you know, just they specifically work within sports. And they seem to be more aligned with athletic training, but I don't feel, from my understanding, they can do as much as an athletic trainer, but they are there. I know in the Republic of Ireland, I can't remember the actual, it's like an athletic rehabilitative instructor or something like that. And that's their program that they have. I'm not sure the actual name that they have, but they have effectively an athletic trainer in the Republic of Ireland. That's why they have the joint agreement with the BOC and with Canada. So we don't have them as such in the UK. I'm not sure in terms of the rest of sort of the world. Megan may be better placed to answer that one.
So in Canada, it's this, it's an athletic therapist. I believe you're right for the Republic of Ireland. And Canada, we actually have a liaison on the international committee from their organization, the CATA. So we're working pretty closely here in the States with the Canadian Athletic Therapists Association in terms of kind of nurturing that relationship, because it's new that those have been recognized, as congruent programs. I know that athletic trainers can go work internationally. It just depends on in what capacity and how that is done. I know that we have a lot of athletic trainers from Japan that come here and get their schooling and then eventually go back to Japan, because in Japan, essentially, and I could be misinformed a little bit, it's been a while since this has been explained to me, so things could have changed since I've gotten the explanation. But in Japan, essentially, it's almost as if you're going to medical school in order to do what we do. So a lot of Japanese students come here to the United States for university and then essentially move back to Japan. I've worked with at least 20 Japanese athletic trainers in my career here in the States, and a lot of them have gone back. A lot of them are staying here. We have a large body of athletic trainers that are in China and Asia in general that are working through like a Chinese international work program. And so they are quickly organizing and are establishing things over in Asia and China. And even, I don't know if anybody saw the latest NATA International Committee update e-blast that went out last month, but Chinese government is looking to hire athletic trainers specifically starting now, and we'll be working with Chinese athletes in preparation for the next Olympics. So if that's something you are interested in as an American athletic trainer, look into that, because they are paying us to do that. It's not just go work for China for free. So that's an opportunity for athletic trainers to work internationally. Wales lacrosse, I ended up finding an athletic trainer that was getting her master's in university over in the UK. And so 3.5 years ago, maybe 4 years ago now, I found her on the International Committee LinkedIn page, and she kind of applied for the position and took over with Wales lacrosse. And so I'm not physically there. She was going to all their monthly training sessions, et cetera. And with her, I was able to help establish strength and conditioning, nutrition, all these other aspects for the team that I hadn't been able to do from abroad. So there are athletic trainers working internationally. It just, each case is different on work visas, how they're legally able to work overseas, what kind of insurance they have to have as a team providing that. Do they have to purchase their own? What kind of insurance is available within that country as terms of liability. So it varies greatly in terms of working internationally, but we are in a lot of places. So stay tuned to the International Committee, because we're working on establishing contact lists, a mentorship program for specific countries, and then also putting together a list of American international schools that might provide opportunities for us to go work abroad as well.
Very good. Jamie, I appreciate you reaching out to me. I know that it was the podcast with Chris Butler that we did about core exercises. I think you said you Googled core exercises and then listened to that one and then just reached out and said, hey, thanks for doing the show. And then here you are now on the show. And of course, if you're ever in Houston, I'd like to meet up, shake your hand, that kind of thing. So what can we as athletic trainers do better do to help your athletes as they come over here better transition and also to build the bridge between athletic training and physiotherapists?
More so just doing what you guys are doing, and I think then having sort of the athletic trainers having an awareness that, as Megan said, the international athletes either coming in or going out as well, because obviously American athletes going out won't have had much dealing with the physiotherapist and they'll be looking for a trainer. So, both of us working together to inform if we know that the athlete's going to go to a country where we know sort of a bit more of how their medical system's set up within sports, to let them know, okay, so it's not going to be the physiotherapist you're going to go see, it's going to be the trainer, the athletic trainer you're going to go see for the most part, or for you guys, vice versa. But yeah, just educating them on, I find the biggest thing with the youth athletes is just education, getting them used to sort of the routine, how things work, what I can do, what I can't do. And that going forward just gives them awareness of, okay, every medical person they meet is going to have their own scope of practice. They can do certain things, they can't do certain things. Are they the best person to speak to? So let's say, okay, the physio, he can deal with my muscles, I rolled my ankle, the physio can deal with that. Am I having more medical issues? Do I need to go see the doctor? Just educating them on who would be the right person to go see for their various ailments.
All right. So again, continuing to use the words medical professional. So if I say, hey, I know you're going over there, you're going to work with a Northern Ireland soccer team. So Jamie is a medical professional. He's the guy you want to talk to. They do a very similar job. So just having that conversation, speaking well of other medical professionals, and just saying, but what they do is slightly different. So if you don't know what they do, you can ask him and he can better tell you. And just creating the initial conversation, if I know that a kid is going, an athlete is going, then just kind of preparing them for there are some differences, but there are medical professionals there to take care of you.
Yeah, because then they know, once they land, they know they're going to be taken care of. It's not sort of they have to sit for a little bit, and have this acute injury turn into something chronic because they just don't know who they need to go and see.
Very good. Megan, final thoughts?
No, I just would second all of that. I think it's just about teaching the patient to advocate for themselves. If they don't understand that, they need to ask those questions. And I think it's great too that if you encounter a physiotherapist as an athletic trainer or vice versa, that you don't just assume they can't do this or they can't do that or they don't have the experience with this or don't have the experience with that. I think, here in the States with the PDAT rift, I'll say, sometimes I think physiotherapists get a bad rap on initial meeting, but some have nothing but great sports experience. They're an asset. They can teach us things that we maybe not be experts at, and vice versa. So I think it's just a matter of sparking that conversation, finding out what the background is, what the experience is, and working together as medical professionals for a common goal of competent care for your patients.
Very well put. Jamie, final thoughts?
Yeah, just, keep educating yourself, then that can help you educate your patients, and not just your patients, but also your wider team, because, within the program, we tend to operate just as a lone practitioner, but we have the coaching staff and everyone else around that, the SSC staff, that we can just educate them as much, and they can then help push people in the right direction as to who they need to go see, what they can do, and, education is key for a lot of stuff.
All right, very good. If you want to reach out to Megan, you can email her, M-E-G-H-A-N, megan.mckay@bcm.edu. If you want to reach out to Jamie, jmcf999@aol.com. He's also on social media, so you can maybe find him there on Instagram. But reach out to Jamie. Hey, ask him about physiotherapists, about his experience. Maybe you want him to talk to your sports medicine program. You know, he's pretty good at getting on the Skype or the guest speaker, and Megan as well. Again, if you didn't get to watch the live stream, then you may want to jump in towards like the second half, and then that way you can see Megan cuddling her cute little baby.
Thanks for letting her make an appearance.
So you as the listener, I want to encourage you, just like Jamie did, if you have a topic that you want to hear about, you have an expert that you know that has a story or something that they need to share, or it's somebody that you want to interview, then hook me up with the information. Say, hey, I'd like for you to talk to this person about this. Or if, you know, you're at NATA this summer or, you know, in the future, then just say, hey, I would like to interview this person about this, or I'd like you to have Bubba interview this person about this. Then let me know. Again, the podcast is about improving athletic training and promoting the profession and building those bridges. And so if there's something that I can do to help you build or improve your practice of athletic training, sports medicine, then let me know, and that's what I want to do. So reach out. Again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com has all the ways to get a hold of me. This episode is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/physiotherapist. We got Megan McKay and Jamie McFarlane. I appreciate you guys, and that is a wrap. All right, I will see you guys.
All right, thanks. Thanks for letting her make an appearance. I'm glad she stayed quiet.
She's adorable.
I was nervous.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, rugby is, nobody knows about rugby here in the States, Jamie, but.
And you said that with the Sabercats for the.
Yeah, so I'm with the Houston Sabercats. So I don't know if you've heard there's a new professional league here in the States.
I'm keeping an eye on the wider thing. Justin Fitzpatrick, is he coach of the Sabercats?
Yeah, he is. You know Justin. I'm sure you know Justin. Everybody knows Justin. So yeah,
I only learned yesterday that Justin was the head coach. He just happened to be on the Instagram feed because some of the U of O guys were down. Uh-huh. I just went on their Instagram feed, went on to the Sabercats, and just looked back through the feed, and oh, there was Justin.
Yep. Justin knows everybody. So I think we got a couple guys up from your neck of the woods on the team. So
yeah, there's the guys at Fly Half.
I'm trying to think who all is over there. So we've got Jamie Devers from over there, Justin Allen's from up there. I can't remember. And then, up from the Pacific Northwest, we've got Sam Windsor. And then Matthew Truville. They're both from the Seattle team that he came down with. So yeah, it's crazy. Seattle has a team. So Seattle, Seawolves.
Oh, the Seawolves, yeah, because I know Justin was with the Seattle Saracens.
Yeah, they still have a club, but the Seattle Seawolves is the professional team. So mm-hmm. Yeah, there's seven teams this season. New York has already been added for next season, and I think they're looking at potentially getting a team from Vancouver and potentially Ontario as well.
It's very exciting what's happening, you know, and I know there was pro rugby they tried and that folded 18 months later, and they're trying to sort of push the European way of doing sports on America, and that didn't work. So hopefully the fact that MLS came through there and showed the way, hopefully MLR can do something similar, because I mean America as a national side are growing. I mean their sevens side, phenomenal. And
sevens is amazing. Yeah, I mean, and then even our team, we've got Osea Kolonasau from Fiji. He was the captain of their gold medal sevens team. He's on our team. We have some very high quality rugby players that are playing in the league. So, it's exciting. And so far, I think the organization is being run pretty well it's brand new league. So obviously there's some growing pains, but it's been really cool to be a part of it. I have a Welsh grandparent, so I grew up watching rugby, obviously Wales rugby. I do have a DAF hat in my house, so. most Americans don't know it. So I think that's definitely something, bringing it back to the broadcast with athletic training, that's very different, is how we practice the sport. You know, you mentioned soccer, you have to wait to run on the field, and rugby, you don't. And you have to know the sport to be able to not get in the way or get injured yourself. And so, I think that would be another interesting topic potentially, is how to work in various sports and how the nuances are different for us as medical professionals working pitch side care. I think would be interesting too, because those two in particular are like opposite. Soccer player goes down, looks like their ankle's dislocated. The referee lollygags to walk over to card the guy, and then lollygags to walk over to check on the guy, and then he'll wait a minute to decide to call you on. In rugby, you don't wait for anything. You just go.
while you're waiting, you've got the coaches in your ear saying they're injured, you know, go see them, yep.
Like, I can only run so fast, coach, but oh, that's crazy. You know, Justin, well, I'll have to tell him you said hi. So
yeah, definitely. And obviously, you know, I've got them on Instagram, following them on Instagram. I'm really excited to see how MLR does, and hopefully, you know, it lasts longer than the pro rugby. And it's just a very exciting time for rugby in the US.
Yeah, I think so, for sure. So yeah, you'll have to get down for a Houston Sabercats match.
I will endeavor to try my best.
It's a bit of a trek from Portland or from Ireland, but
anyway, it's a trek, but you know, we'll see what we can do.
Yeah, Jeremy, we'll have to get you up to one of the matches.
That sounds good. Sounds like fun.
Yep. Awesome. Well, thanks for having us. I'm sure you have other things to do and students waiting for you, so we'll let you get on.
I appreciate it, y'all.
Yes. All right, thanks for having us.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.